All right, welcome back once again, everyone. We're at the Ham Expo here, Massachusetts. We're joined here with myself, W1SNH. My name's Ryan.
I'm Eric, N1JUR.
I'm Andy. I'm KB1OIQ.
And I'm Todd, W1STJ.
Ah, very cool.
Yeah, so.
All right.
Before we get into the interview, how's the show been going for you?
I think the show's been going fantastically. I did a quick forum yesterday for a couple hours. I did a talk an hour or so ago. It went very well, and I'm having a great time.
Excellent. Have you had a chance to go through the flea market yet?
No, not yet. I'll be heading over there maybe after this. I'm looking for a dummy load, but I did walk around the little everyone here, and I'm really impressed with the that Maestro.
Yeah,
it's a pretty cool piece of equipment.
Better clear that credit card. Very cool. Well, things are going great here. So, yeah, we got a great guest here tonight. Today here at the fest here. You can see how I've been a little worn down by the end of the day. But I'd like to introduce you guys. Obviously, Andy. He is the creator and the maintainer of Ham Radio Lennox. I have been had a privilege to see it live in action at one of our club meetings, and very impressed with the format. But in essence, you know, maybe you could tell us a little about your kind of backstory, Andy. You know, how'd you get into ham radio? What's that little story look like? And then we can dive in a little bit of the ham radio Linux and, you know, kind of what inspired you to build that and move forward.
Sounds good. So I started using Linux in 1997 and Slackware version 1 and started playing around and learning. I had never played with a Unix system before, ever. So I learned as I went along. And after a while, I started to teach Linux at the local adult education program at night. And there were two gentlemen in the class, and they didn't know it at the time, but they were both hams. And at one point, they came up to me, and they said, "Hey, Andy, you know, with your computer skills and this, and we can teach you the radio stuff, you might be able to, you know, be helpful in MCOM and other related activities." And I didn't really know what MCOM was or anything at the time. So I studied for my general in 2007, got that license, and then went on for onto my extra in 2009. Nice. And the rest, as they say, is history.
History, right, yeah. Is it switch on?
It is up.
Okay. So awesome. So that kind of introduced you to ham radio. So, you know, did you just kind of just dive whole hog into it, or you just kind of like ease into it like a lot of people do in terms of like your blend of Linux and, you know, ham radio?
I eased into ham radio. You know, I bought an HT and started playing around on 2 meters and doing that sort of thing, and found a local club with a very high technical caliber of people.
Yes.
And so I learned from the right folks. I got the right technical information, not the FUD that some people learn, and went from there. But then after a while, I said, you know, I have this Linux expertise. There's some ham radio software out there for Linux, and I pulled it together on my own, you know, computer. Mm-hmm. And then after a while, I said, well, gee, why can't I share this with everybody else?
Sure. Yeah.
And so I didn't know anything about creating a distribution or any of that sort of thing, and said, no, I don't want to start from scratch. Mm-hmm. So I started with Ubuntu because it was then and still is now a very popular flavor of Linux that people like to use.
Yep.
And I learned what remastering meant. So what it really means is take some software packages out, put other packages in related to ham radio, learn how to build an ISO file. And I found out about SourceForge and have been distributing it from there ever since roughly May 2011.
So what made you go from the, hey, I've got this own little, you know, distro built for yourself, to saying, hey, the rest of the world needs it?
Well, I said to myself, you know, let's put it out there. I created it. It's all free and open source software, every bit of it, as far as I know. Nothing's proprietary.
Okay.
And I said, if I can make that so other people can use it, why not? It's a way to give back to both communities. So I tried that, and the first 7 versions were not worthy of leaving my house. I was like, well, yeah, I did it, but version 8 was the first version I put out there, and that numbering system is just straight increment. I'm not a marketing person.
You don't
person.
Like to do the dot? Yeah,
I'm not a marketing person, but, you know, later I had, you know, version, you know, 24, A, B, C, D, whatever, right?
Yep.
But it doesn't line up with any Ubuntu version or any year or anything like that. It's just consecutive.
Okay.
And every 6 to 8 months or so, I update it and try to keep it reasonable, put it out there on SourceForge, and lots of folks seem to like it.
Okay. Now, describe to me the package itself, though. Is it, in essence, just a, you know, a small mix of certain apps, or is it like, if I was to download it and use it, would it be my complete suite from like logging to digital modes to sideband? You know, kind of describe some of the packages.
It's as complete as I know how to make it based on the software that people have written. So there's a lot of digital software out there. There's WSJTX for FT8. Right. There's FL Digi for those digital modes. There's other programs in there. There's logging. Yep. There's programs for training in CW, satellites, SDR, all sorts of different things are in there. As much as I could find that was free or open source or similarly licensed, I put it on there.
Oh, wow. Okay. Now, so here's the big question. How do you deal with all of the typical issues with software these days? Obviously, you're building your own distribution, so you have to maintain it. Mm-hmm. And dealing with all of that, do you just get to a point where you're just like, throw your hands up and be like, I can't handle the fact that,
You'd be surprised. I actually don't get that many technical support emails.
Oh,
now,
wow.
There is a forum on SourceForge where people often will post questions.
Yep.
And if I can answer the question, I will. If I can't answer the question, I try to direct them, to someone who can answer it.
Good.
And the most recent version has an unfortunate bug in the installer where it doesn't create the account that you told it to create. But I have a quick script that I wrote to fix that.
Okay.
But unfortunately, not everyone reads the documentation before doing it. And so they'll post a question and say, Andy, I installed this, but I can't log in.
Yeah.
And so I don't really want to say RTFM because that's kind of rude, but
it is,
I'll point them to the document and say, please try this. And if you still have trouble, let me know.
Cool.
And so 99% of the time, that solves the problem, and they go away with something installed, and hopefully they enjoy using it.
Now, what type of hardware would you need? If I was to basically pull the package down, should I consider specific hardware, or am I able to kind of scrap together something that's kind of been over in the corner collecting dust?
Use a PC that's about 6-7, no more than 6-7-8 years old, and sure, a brand new one will work too. Make sure you've got at least 4 gigabytes of memory. Make sure you've got at least 20 gigabytes of SSD or hard drive or whatever you have.
Yep.
And everything has network these days, so there's no issue there.
Yep.
And make sure it's got a bootable thumb drive. Now, the image today is 5 gigabytes, so that's an 8 gigabyte thumb drive.
Right.
Older machines would boot USB, but not necessarily a device that big because it didn't exist in that day.
Yeah, right.
So as long as you can do that, you're good to go.
Nice.
Would you be comfortable saying a Raspberry Pi 4, 8 gig?
I have not tried Raspberry Pi 4, but what I'm told is that it has enough compute horsepower to do it, but I have not pulled together such a software collection. I've been asked to, but I've not done it.
So I'm a very basic end user, but I do have a couple Pis around the shack, and I think I'm going to give that a try.
Right.
So.
It should work.
Feel free to grab a couple stickers.
If you start with Raspbian and build from there, I mean, these programs for in the Ubuntu repository build on all sorts of architectures.
Sure.
There's a fighting chance that it would work.
Excellent. One of the distros I use on my Raspberry Pis is Diet Pi. It's very lightweight, but very similar to Raspbian, and it's fun. So.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Looking forward to it.
So if obviously being in the Windows world and in a little bit of the Mac world, you find that you stick to certain loggers and whatnot. And in terms of the logging capabilities, do I sacrifice any of those capabilities to be able to integrate into LOTW and things like that if I decided to?
Honestly, I don't know because I've never run any of those Windows loggers.
Okay.
So I really don't know for sure. But what I can say is there's a relatively casual logging program called Xlog, which I did not write, but I currently maintain it.
Okay.
And I use that logger all the time. I'm not a heavy duty contester, and it meets my needs for field day and 13 colonies and all of that.
Okay.
But there's also a much more sophisticated logger with a database backend called CQR Log.
Right.
And that knows how to query various online things to fill in the blanks for QSOs and much, much more.
Oh, wow.
So there's a couple of other loggers that people have written. If I find it and it's free and open source and it looks like it's not terrible, I put it in. If it's supported, I'll put it in.
Oh, very cool.
Excellent.
Got a little people going.
We're having a lot of people come through the booth here. This is great, and a lot of traffic here.
I'm the closest one to the table, so I guess I'll do the crowd control for this live stream.
So, do you find that you've gotten more of an interest in terms of helping maintain that process, or is it just kind of you and just whatever you at the moment?
I'm kind of into the old school New England handcrafted quality, but it's only quality if the users say it is.
Sure.
Right?
Yep, right.
I like to think that it is.
Yeah.
And so I like to do it that way. It works, but I hear the user community. If they say, Andy, we found this piece of software, would you consider putting it in?
Yep.
If it's free and open source or some similar license,
right.
I will, as long as it's maintained.
Yeah, very cool.
I don't want to put something in that's not maintained.
Yep. Now, Now, are you building, so once you install it, so maybe you can kind of walk through a little bit of the install, is it all menu-based or is it you have to do any command line? So what's the skill level of most people? I mean, obviously you have to have some level of Unix, but in essence, is it a higher level, advanced level of Unix, or is it enough to be able to, like, I can copy and paste command lines? Or
well, once you download the ISO file and run the MD5SUM program to make sure you've got a clean download, there's a proper way to copy that to a USB thumb drive so it's bootable. There's a variety of programs on Windows that do it. I don't know their names, but they exist. Put that in your computer, set your BIOS to boot USB, boot it up, and mostly it's self-explanatory. There's an icon on the desktop that says install. You either click or double click. I forget which. That brings up the standard Ubuntu installation program. And then you just answer the questions and go.
Wow. Awesome. Okay. So it's pretty straightforward, which sounds great.
Yeah. The only thing I did to the installer is I added my own slideshow to it.
Okay.
I did not change anything else in the installer. That's all Ubuntu's code.
Very cool. Very cool. Now, in terms of the integrations for WSJTX to be able to do cat control, that capability built into that too as
well? That capability is in there. There's a library called Hamlib that handles an awful lot of that. Okay. And there's other ways to do that. What I added to the mix also is I customized the menu to make it easier for people to get at these programs.
Okay.
Now, this is running the XFCE desktop, which has a menu and has a way to describe which applications go in which menu.
Yep.
But I didn't care for the way it organized some of the things. It just didn't meet my sense of orderly.
Okay.
So I created a new menu called Andy Ham Radio Linux. I didn't touch the other ones. And I customized that the way I wanted it to be.
Nice.
So people could find the programs that I install.
Okay.
And one of my quality control steps before I release it is to test every single menu to make sure that program comes up. Because if not, I've made a mistake and somebody's going to have a problem that I don't want them to have.
You get 5 million
I'll get people asking about it. And my goal, besides giving back to the Linux and ham radio communities, is I want this thing to just work.
Right.
So people don't fuss with a computer. They enjoy the ham radio hobby where the computer helps them with that enjoyment.
So
that's my goal.
A support versus a hindrance. And
right. And now, okay, we may never quite get there, but I want to asymptotically approach that.
Yeah. Nice. Are you moving towards, because right now most of the rig control type stuff is all CIV and you're being, via serial port. Are you considering moving towards like kind of a network type approach eventually where you have that capability to control like an SDR?
I have an ICOM 7610, and that plugs in by USB, and Linux recognized that. It created the right serial devices. It recognized the sound card. It did all of that beautifully. And so I'm using modern radio, so that kind of stuff just works. But, there are external sound card devices you can buy and hook them up to older radios. It is possible to do all these things. I have no experience setting up a radio that's controlled by the internet or anything of that nature, so I don't know what's out there for Linux that can do that.
So like in terms of like if someone came to do it, you have any people in your community that does like Flex or something like that, mm-hmm. where they're like network based and that type of stuff would be a bonus, but in essence it sounds like it shouldn't be too difficult to be able to architect some of that
stuff. If somebody showed me a program or a way to do that, if it's free and open source, I will put it in there so others can enjoy it.
Very cool.
And that just adds to the mix. I put as wide a variety of software in there as I could, because as we know there's so many facets to this hobby.
And they keep growing by leaps and bounds every
Indeed
day every
do.
Time you look at something. So, yeah, that's totally awesome in terms of configuration. You got any questions?
No, it's fascinating, and I'm looking forward to going home tonight and giving it a download and trying it.
So, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah, so before we kind of get towards the, we got a little time here. So what are your kind of future plans with it? Obviously you're going to get to a certain point that, it's either going to grow or you're going to have to either pass it on. Are you planning kind of like your exit strategy a little bit?
I have not thought about that. There's no heir apparent that might take it over or anything like that. It's been a one-man show.
It's an open source community. So
anybody could take it and build on it and do that. I feel like I stood on the shoulders of giants to get here, and somebody will someday stand on my shoulders and make it better. And that's what it's all about.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah.
But I'll tell you, I was extraordinarily thrilled. About a year ago, I got an email from SourceForge with a PDF file in there, and it said, congratulations, there have been 100,000 downloads of this software package since 2011.
That's
so I want to thank the user community for that. I didn't do that. All of you did that.
Yeah,
so I want to thank everybody for their support that way.
That's amazing. 100,000 downloads for something that is very niche market, but in essence, at the same time, is very much needed in the ham community, especially if you are... you don't want to be in that Windows world, or you're looking for an alternative. And so,
right.
You know, in my mind, I think that's a big gap that's being filled. At the same time, I think, you know, it's a great place that people can be, you know, they can contribute, they can be part of the process, even if they may not have even a lick of Linux or, you know, understand, they could probably propose, you know, new improvements and features and stuff like that.
People with all different skill levels come to the table to try this. Maybe they just want to try something new and different. Maybe they're mad at their existing operating system. Who knows why? But if they try it, and they don't like it, well, okay, at least they tried it,
right?
And many of them try it, and they do like it. Right. So in the last year, there have been 13,000 downloads of version 25 and 25A, nice. Which I came out with just before I went to Dayton. Okay. And that was the very, very first time I had ever gone to Dayton. Uh-huh. I gave a talk. 100 people showed up. I was thrilled. I had a great time at Dayton.
Nice. That's awesome. So, excellent. So did you do a workshop out there too as well in the demonstration, or just kind of just do a general talk?
I was the first, one of the first talks on the first day, and several people came to me and said, Andy, we wanted to come to your talk, but it took 25 minutes to get through the line to get in the door. And I had never experienced Dayton before, so I didn't know this kind of thing would happen. But I was thrilled that they accepted my talk and found me a time slot.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Yeah, Dayton's a good place to you know, kind of just get a lot of traffic. I mean, the numbers that they were proposing that showed up is like in the, you know, tens of thousands. So, you know, in essence, you definitely got a lot of eyeballs on that, and I'm sure it definitely helped.
Are you planning on going back again next year?
I would love to go back to Dayton again. I spent 2 hours or 2 days driving out, 2 days driving back. That was a lot of fun, and I hope I can do it again. I'd like to.
Yeah. Anything in Dayton you liked at all?
I did not tour the towns or anything like that. Okay. I just went to the convention and back.
Right, just the convention. I don't care about the town. I'm not
I went to all the vendor booths. I sat through a couple of talks. I enjoyed socializing with a lot of people. The flea market was huge.
Oh, I can imagine.
Right. Yeah. And so it was, and the weather was really good. But the lunch area, it almost looked like a carnival with all the food trucks
The
colors and the blinky lights and all that. That's all I could think of.
They like want to keep you there. That's for sure. Right.
Exactly.
You're not leaving.
So Andy, talk to us, aside from your programming side on Linux, your ham radio interests, any particular mode you like operating, your home shack?
Okay. So my home shack has built up a lot over 15 years.
Yep.
My radio, as I said, is an ICOM 7610.
Yep.
I have the 500-watt Elecraft amplifier.
You got two ICOM over here.
I've got the Elecraft antenna tuner as well.
Very nice.
But I moved up at one time. I had an older Dentron amp with tubes and whatnot, and that worked fine.
Yep.
And so I've done that. One of my more recent interests is bringing antique AM and FM radios back to life.
Very cool.
And so I have fun driving a soldering iron and playing those games. And I don't know a lot about tube technology, but enough to fix it and bring it back to life.
Sure.
So I've got about a dozen radios that I've done that with and had a lot of fun there.
Okay. Now, in terms of your AM radios, are they the more traditional, like home AM radio styles, or we're looking at like more tube type transmitter? You know,
I haven't done any ham gear yet. But I'm doing 1920s, 1930s mostly.
Okay.
I'm not a woodworker, so I don't mess with the finish, but I get the internals working I enjoy it. You know, patina is okay to a point.
Sure. Right, yeah.
You know, and so I'm all right with that. And I'm not in it for the money. I just enjoy bringing it back to life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someday somebody else will have it.
Yeah.
And so I do that. But as far as modes go, I do CW with the SKCC folks from time to time. Sideband, I recently did over 2,000 contacts representing Massachusetts for 13 colonies.
Oh, wow.
Had a lot of fun with that.
Okay.
I have no religious inclination one way or the other for or against any mode,
mm-hmm.
with the exception of the proprietary digital modes. I won't use those.
Okay.
That's a personal choice. What people do with their hobby time, that's cool.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right? CW is technically a digital mode, though. I have to remind you. So.
Well, indeed.
You are sort of on the fringe.
So toward that end, I'm very interested in what the folks on the M17 project are doing. So I'll give them a shameless plug because they're working hard. They're doing some great work with Codec 2.
Yep.
And many of them are from Southern New Hampshire.
Yes. Yeah. Yep. They are making some very good inroads in open source and that type of size stuff. But
we actually
have the M17 stickers right over here.
They just dropped off their stickers at the booth.
I wish I had more time to help them, but on version 25A that just got released, I put a couple of their pieces of software in there,
baked
it in with the menus and whatnot to hopefully get them more visibility and people will learn what they're all about.
Okay. So definitely. So it's almost like a complete package pretty much if you were, you know, looking to get something that you didn't have to like kind of piecemeal together.
I think it is. And most of the stuff came from the Ubuntu repository. So it's relatively easy to install either graphically or from the command line.
Okay.
But some of it is built from source.
Yep.
And sometimes that's not too hard. And other times it's quite painful.
Right.
But again, some people find that easy to do. Some people don't. And that's okay. We all have different expertise.
Yep.
So I do that for you. And tie it into the menu so you don't have to.
We appreciate it.
And so, but yes, it makes those harder to upgrade.
It does. So. But in essence, you know, if you're maintaining it, then in essence, there's going to be hopefully a path to get to the next level and whatnot.
Right. And so one criticism people have had is there's no electronic way to upgrade from version N to version N plus one. You know, with Ubuntu, there's, you know, do dist upgrade or some such command. You have to basically reinstall the next ISO file. So what I tell people is back up your home directory. Yep. And if it's on a different partition, you almost don't have to do that. It won't touch it, but do it anyway. Install the new version and then restore your home directory. Yep. And for most people, that's not really a problem.
Wow. Awesome.
But it's hard to do an upgrade program and get it right. Mm. And I don't know all those details. Well, so I've shied away from it.
And it's open source. So in essence, there should be that level of expectation that, you know, mm-hmm. you're going to have to put a little work in, click and
point. A couple of people have mentioned it, but nobody's really complained. So, but it's a valid point that other distributions have easier ways to do that. And this does not. So it's a fair critique.
The way I look at it is I wouldn't do a install very often. So mm-hmm. it's a good refresher.
Yes.
So.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. There was a gentleman online. He refers to himself as the old tech guy. And I forget his name and call sign. Yeah. But he did what I thought was an extraordinarily fair and balanced review of Andy's Ham Radio Linux. So if people want another opinion on whether it's good, bad, or otherwise, watch that video. It's called The Old Tech Guy.
Cool. Well, we'll make sure we throw those in the links in the video. Okay. If you got those, send them over my way, and we'll make sure we get them in there. But so, back to kind of just, what you're working on. So AM radio stuff, what's the most recent AM radio project you're kind of working on? And,
probably 1950s. Okay. I took a Philco AM/FM radio that used to belong to my mother, and I brought it back to life. And when we were all locked down during COVID, I had that radio running every single day while I was working from home.
Wow. Yeah,
and it helped me keep my sanity.
It gives you that warm feeling for sure.
I
could never breach into that, area because my electronics background is very slim. But in essence, I think once I get down the road, like yourself, I'm gonna try it out.
I had fun building some crystal radios during COVID. I learned about spider coils and the old antique headphones and all that. And, and the Russian D18 diode is my friend.
Very cool.
It works really well in crystal radios.
I'm just curious, do you have a variac for bringing the voltage up?
I do. And I was taught by one of my Elmers that they would put an incandescent light bulb in series with the AC line as a current limiter.
Uh-huh.
And that works very, very well. If that light bulb lights up, shut it off quickly because something's a dead short.
Yeah.
And so these are things that,
my
Elmers taught me, and I put it into practice. And I have not yet been zapped by a hot chassis, but if I'm not careful and I do enough of them, the time will come.
Yep. Do not do when tired.
Right. No, do not do when tired.
Yes.
So what would you, I always like to ask a question. What would you, as a new, if you ran into a new ham, and in essence, you're obviously involved in a club and whatnot, and you probably come across a few of those folks, what advice do you like to give them where, obviously you are, an Elmer in my mind, in terms of what you're doing and obviously contributing back to the community, but it sounds like you're very much willing to just share anything. What would be your, opinion or, suggestion or recommendation for a new ham?
Well, I would try to hook that new ham up with people that had the correct technical knowledge, not some of the stuff that's out there that isn't correct. And I was lucky that way. I met up with people who were really good technically and explained things and steered me where to look on the internet for more information. Okay. And if I were Elmering somebody, I would do the same thing. I wouldn't just give them the answer.
Yep.
I would say, here's where you can go to learn more on that subject and then come back to me and talk.
Very cool.
And we'll do more. Because if you just tell someone the answer, they don't really learn anything.
No. Right? As Todd says all the time, hey, give it to me. You can tell me all many times you want, but until I do it myself.
Yeah.
Right.
The first time that happened to me, I built a cubicle quad for 2 meters. And I didn't understand why the SWR was 2.5 to 1 because I didn't understand the resonance of a full wave loop. And my Elmer said, look up the concept of a quarter wave matching stub and then come back and talk to me. So I did. I put one in. Beautiful.
Wow.
Right. Nice. So I learned by doing, and I will remember that. And same thing with Linux stuff. I mean, at one time I learned what the DD command does because I trashed my disk.
Yeah.
Right?
Yes, that's so like
if
delete
I type
star
that command, I literally sit on my hands before hitting enter because I trashed a hard drive and I had not backed it up.
Oh.
So you learn a lot of things when you make mistakes.
Yes. Never not to do it again.
But right. I don't care if you use a GUI or the command line or I use both.
Okay.
It's what and what you're comfortable with.
Yep.
Cool.
So I hope people will download it. I hope people will use it. If they have constructive feedback, I'm very open to that.
Awesome.
Because that's how it gets better.
Yeah.
And people many times have said, Andy, here's a piece of software that's not in your collection. Would you put it there? And as long as it isn't proprietary, it's got a good license on it, yep. I'll do that.
Very cool. Right.
But
cool.
I'm at 5 gigabytes now, so I have to watch the limits there.
Sure. Yes.
SourceForge does have a limit of how big a file can be. Uh-huh. And folks, you know, as it gets too big, it becomes cumbersome to download.
Right. Now, how do you deal with, just kind of thought, how do you deal with programs that eventually the maintainer decides to just no longer maintain it?
Well, if there's a problem with that program, unfortunately, I'd have to pull it out. You know, sometimes somebody will step up and maintain it. Sometimes, unfortunately, the bits were meant to rot.
Sure.
Right. It just happens over time. Right. Okay. So I have had a couple of programs that I had to pull out of there because they weren't maintained and they were problematic. But thankfully, there was a new program that did that function and better that I learned about and put that in. So that's happened a couple of times.
Cool. All right. You guys got anything?
No, this is great. So if the community wanted to get a hold of you, how would they? What's your preferred?
My recommendation would be to send email to my call sign at the league. So KB1OIQ@ARRL.net. is the best way to do it. And then I will do the best I can to help you or steer you in the direction of someone who can help you.
Excellent. And then if they went on SourceForge, what would they put in the line
so
to
So if
search?
You go to SourceForge, SFSierraFoxtrot.net is the short way to get there.
Okay.
In the search box, type either my call sign or type Andy Ham Radio Linux, and you'll find it. You'll see all kinds of different versions there. Go to the latest version and download that. And please read the getting started document. Yes. It will save you some grief, really. And I don't want to beat a dead horse, but I wouldn't have written it, and I wouldn't ask you to spend your time doing it if it wasn't important.
Excellent.
Right? Very
so
good.
Please read that document, and then the one issue that's there, you will fix. You'll never have to touch it again, and hopefully you'll be thrilled with the software collection.
Awesome.
So, very cool.
So don't thank just me. Thank all of those people who wrote those programs as well.
Yeah. Right?
Everybody has contributed from all over the world.
Very cool. Well, that sounds like it's a great active community, and Andy's done some really great stuff with, you know, Ham Radio Linux. And so, like you said, get out there, download it, try it, you know, join it with Ryan there, and you know, let us know. You know, obviously, you know, if you've tried it, you know, definitely put the comments in if you're in the live stream. If not, you know, let us know or head over to Andy's SourceForge page and be part of the community there and get involved. With that, is there any parting things you wanted to, you know, mention or?
Yeah, just one comment. So I have occasionally been asked to visit local ham radio clubs and give a presentation. I'm happy to do that. I have done it for a few clubs on Zoom or WebEx or other such technologies. I did it for the Rat Pack group one time. That talk is on their website. A lot of great talks on that website.
Yeah, it's even so, on our own website too. Right.
And so if there is a ham radio club out there that would like me to do that, please contact me, and if we can arrange a schedule, I'm happy to do it.
Very cool.
Excellent.
Right. Awesome.
Really appreciate your time stopping
by
the booth.
This was fun.
Yeah, definitely. Appreciate glad to have you on.
Thanks for coming by. It was great to meet you, and
good to meet you
we're
going to
check
well.
It all out.
All right. Sounds good.
Sounds good.
Well, with that, I'm going to say 7-3s and hope everyone enjoys the rest of the show.
Definitely. All right.
7-3, guys.
Okay. 7-3. Thank you.